Today's lecture is on natural selection. So natural selection can be viewed from very much a microorganismal perspective, and a lot of that, the difference between what goes on among microorganisms and what goes on among other types of organisms that one typically will be studying natural selection association with, is the clonal nature of microorganisms. So having considered aspects of hard and soft selection, we'll now turn to another aspect of selection called periodic selection. In periodic selection, what you have are clonal populations, meaning that these populations are not experiencing any sex. And the consequence of clonal populations being subject to natural selection is that it's more the genotype of the populations over long periods that's being selected for or against, rather than specifically individual alleles. So there's a tendency for periodic selective sweeps through populations where newly arising beneficial mutations increase in frequency towards fixation. And this is what you see with natural selection, period. But the key to periodic selection is that these increases in the frequency of the beneficial mutations, these newly arising beneficial mutations, brings their carrying clone along with them. So this is another way of saying hitchhiking, which is a consequence, which is something that we'll get to. But basically, this carrying clone, this is the genotype within which these beneficial mutations are found. And as the beneficial mutations increase in frequency, it's the entire genotype that they're associated with that also increases in frequency. Because genotypes are not being broken up because there's little or no sex in this population. Periodic selection can occur whenever a sufficiently beneficial new mutation enters a population, it should also say, and that population is clonal. So you've got a population, it's going along, doing its thing, there's a beneficial mutation, and suddenly the individuals that carry, or individual that carries that mutation, increases in frequency within the population. Periodic selection occurs at the expense of population allelic diversity, not just at the locus of the beneficial allele. So what does that mean? It means that as you are increasing the frequency of the beneficial allele towards fixation, towards the point where there are no other alleles present at the locus that the beneficial allele is found at, in addition to the beneficial allele increasing to the point where there's no longer any genetic diversity at that locus, every other allele is also increased to the point where there's no diversity within the population, because every other allele in this population is being fixed in the course of periodic selection, because it's the genotype that's being fixed, not the allele that's being fixed. And again, it's the genotype that's being fixed because there's little or no sex in the population. So that is one clone essentially replaces all other closely related individuals within the population. And when that happens, whatever alleles are found at every locus within that clone, that is going to be the allele that becomes fixed in the population. So here we have a population. We've got these arabidose plus and arabidose minus selectively neutrally marked populations competing against each other. You have an increase in the frequency of one of these selectively neutral markers as a function of whether or not they're found in the same genome as some newly arising beneficial allele. And so we're going along, and then suddenly you have an increase in the ARA plus population. And that's associated with some beneficial allele that's now in the presence, that's now found in the same genome as the ARA plus marker. It doesn't mean that all of the ARA plus in the population is increasing. It just means that there's some genotype that now has a beneficial mutation associated with it, and that specific genotype is increasing at the expense of all other genotypes. It just happens to be carrying an ARA plus allele. And here we have what potentially is a switch, maybe, maybe not, where suddenly there's an ARA minus individual that suddenly has a beneficial mutation that allows it to outcompete all other genotypes in the population, including the ERA plus genotypes, and thus there's a decline in the ERA plus representation as the ERA minus representation increases. And then this is, then what occurs is that you actually have a beneficial mutation, a new one that's arising in the ERA plus population, leading to an increase in that clone, that genotype that happens to have the ERA plus allele, such that it increases in the population at the expense of all other genotypes, and thus ERA plus increases. So what you're seeing here, although it's not obvious looking at it, but the underlying clonality of the population results in this, what you're seeing here is the rise of individual clones of a genotype that just happens to have a beneficial mutation in it, and then it's switching because some other genotype that happens to have the other allele, selectively neutral marker associated with it, has become dominant, and then it switches again, dominant in terms of its fitness. It's the right now the genotype that's most fit in the population is the ERA minus genotype, although frankly, you know, whether or not this is actually due to selection versus drift is hard to say. And then it switches again where the genotype that is dominant in terms of having the highest fitness happens to be one that's an ERA plus. There's no sharing of alleles between ERA plus and ERA minus. It's simply a function of whether or not a individual with this selectively neutral marker versus that one happens to end up with a mutation in it that supplies enough benefit that that genotype that carries the that marker or the other one increases in frequency within the population. And clearly this is the strongest evidence of natural selection, of periodic selection occurring within this population. Yeah, note the delay before we have a sufficiently beneficial mutation that we actually see an increase in one of the selectively neutral markers prevalence in the population. And that's periodic selection there. And, you know, maybe that's periodic selection, and maybe that's periodic selection as well. Either that or this is genetic drift, and that's actual natural selection. So a consequence of periodic selection is the fixation of alleles. And in this way, this fixation, it's somewhat similar to the consequences of genetic bottlenecking. In particular, what happens is with periodic selection, if you indeed get fixation, you end up passing the population through a genetic bottleneck. Indeed, essentially, the bottleneck is through a single individual. Although that individual is an individual from some time in the past that initiated the lineage that has come to fixation. Nevertheless, the result is that you have a purging of quite a bit of the genetic variation from the population. All genetic variation from the population except for that which has become established since the origin of the genotype that in fact has now taken over the population. So selection, in the case of periodic selection, like drift, therefore can be a means of reducing variation within populations. And that is, by what I mean by that is eliminating alleles. This is going to be the case no matter what in selection. I mean, in selection, when you have fixation of allele, you've gotten rid of all of the other alleles at that locus. But with periodic selection in a clonal population, you've not only gotten rid of the alleles found at the locus that is being selected, but you've removed the alleles from the rest of the population because it's not a single allele that's being selected, but an entire genotype that is being selected in the course of periodic selection. A difference, though, exists between selection and drift, and that is that the alleles that are associated with this beneficial allele are not necessarily there randomly. It is instead alleles that, in fact, probably also to some degree contribute to the fitness of the individuals that carry the big beneficial allele that drove the population ultimately to fixation, or drove that genotype ultimately to fixation. So there is non-random components of periodic selection, whereas with a genetic drift, I mean, there really aren't random components. If there are non-random components with genetic drift, then it really isn't genetic drift anymore. It's really more natural selection. I mean, it's some kind. If there's some kind of bias in there, then it's not genetic drift. therefore, genetic drift basically represents an absence of bias or randomness. With periodic selection, by contrast, it's all driven by a bias, and the biases involve more than just a single beneficial allele. So although periodic selection gives rise to the equivalent of bottlenecking in the sense that it can drive alleles out of the population, even beneficial alleles can be driven to extinction, ones that are found in different genotypes, it's not entirely identical to the consequences of simply genetic drift. This is just a reminder. Remember that when you drive alleles at a given locus to extinction, except for one allele, that is what is called fixation. And so, like genetic drift, periodic selection can fix alleles. All selection can fix alleles, although periodic selection can fix alleles that are in addition to the allele that is being, or allele or alleles that are being selected for within the population. And particularly when we have an allele that has become monomorphic, has become the only allele at a given locus, that's called fixed. And fixed alleles can be fixed by natural selection. Normally, alleles can be fixed by genetic drift, although not as efficiently as natural selection. And then even neutral and detrimental alleles can be fixed by natural selection if indeed we're talking about a clonal population and periodic selection. So this is just a model of periodic selection. The idea is that we have this new beneficial allele that has arisen within the population, and it's just marching deterministically towards fixation in the population. Fixation it's become fixed at the point where essentially all the alleles within the population are that allele. And I should point out, in terms of accumulation of adaptation, so it's within this population here that your next beneficial allele is arising. And that means that this next individual, at least in this case, is going to have not only this new beneficial allele, but this beneficial allele too, the one that drove this fixation as well. And so here we have this genotype marching its way towards fixation. And within that population, presumably, you have another beneficial allele rising, and so on and so forth. Of course, this is a very idealized situation because it's a model. It's a deterministic model rather than one of that attempts to introduce the randomness that you see in real populations. We can also describe these rising of beneficial genotypes towards fixation as selective sweeps. So they're selective sweeps by clones carrying new beneficial mutations. And this is another representation of what's going on. So you have a genotype, little a, big B, and another genotype, little a, little b. In this case, this little a, big B genotype is in a minority, and it acquires a mutation, which is the big A mutation. And the big A mutation confers a selective benefit, and therefore the big A allele increases within the population at the expense of the little a allele. But because this is a clonal population and the big A allele is found in association with the big B allele, when the big A allele does its march towards fixation, it's carrying the big B allele along with it. And as a consequence, as the little A allele is driven to extinction, so too is the little B allele. And although it might not be quite extinction, I'm actually showing it, well, maybe that's zero. Well, it can't be zero because it's the same height here. Well, okay, we'll say that it has been reduced to a low level as a consequence of the rise of the big A allele within the population. So this idea that this big B allele is being carried along with the big A allele is called genetic hitchhiking. So hitchhiking is a consequence of linkage between neutral or even deleterious alleles and alleles undergoing positive selection. So why neutral or even deleterious? Because if it's a beneficial allele, although beneficial alleles can be linked together, but if it's a beneficial allele, then it's actually contributing to the rise in frequency of the genotype within the population. So we don't really describe it as hitchhiking along with another allele. But if it's a neutral or deleterious allele, then the only reason it's rising as a consequence of natural selection is because of this genetic hitchhiking. Linkage. So in a sexual population, linkage is a function of how close on the chromosomes two alleles or two loci are to one another. But recall that if we have a clonal population, instead the entire genotype, the entire genome is linked together because there's no recombination to separate them. So the entire genome consists of these beneficial and perhaps less but still beneficial alleles, and then a whole lot of neutral alleles and perhaps some deleterious alleles. And as the genotype as a whole displays a selective benefit, it rises within the population, and as it does so, the rest of the alleles that are found in that genome also rise to perhaps fixation. The result is that unselected alleles given periodic selection also can be driven towards fixation within a population. And this is a lot like you see with genetic drift. Genetic drift can result in neutral or deleterious alleles becoming fixed within a population, basically non-deterministically. Same thing can happen in periodic selection. Because of hitchhiking, it can be difficult to determine what alleles within a population that's undergoing periodic selection are actually driving the selective sweep versus just coming along for the ride. So as you've got these alleles rising up within the population, which allele is causing that rise? If the allele that is causing it is actually unique to the lineage that is rising, well, then it becomes easy. But if there's multiple alleles that are different from other alleles within the population, then it can be difficult to figure out exactly which allele is causing the rise in frequency within the population. That is, which is the beneficial allele and which are the hitchhiking alleles. One can also speak of genes or genetic elements, such as transposons, that hitchhike along mobile carriers, such as phage genomes or conjugative plasmids. And as an aside, both phages and conjugative plasmids have mechanisms whereby they can move from bacterium to bacterium. So in the course of their movement to a new bacterium, other alleles that have become associated with them move as well. These other alleles are not necessarily being selected for. They're certainly not necessarily alleles that are responsible for the actual movement from one bacterium to another, and therefore we can describe these kinds of alleles as hitchhiking as well. So here's another experiment where we've got two bacteria that are competing against one another, and in this case they are being differentiated in terms of a T5 resistant mutation. So what does that mean? Well, T5 is a kind of bacteriophage. So what they do is they plate out these bacteria in the presence of this T5 phage, and the resistant bacteria form colonies and the sensitive ones are wiped out, basically. T5 happens under these conditions to, the T5 resistance happens under these conditions to not confer any selective benefit or cost, and so as a consequence it's easy to generate because you just mix the bacteria with the phage at high phage concentrations, and what you end up with are resistant bacteria. So it's easy to generate a selectively neutral marker. And also it is helpful, it's useful because it basically apparently confers no selective benefit or cost. So anyway, so we're keeping track of how many T5 mutants we have in these cultures, and you can see, in fact, there's no lag here. We have a start off of the population rising. Well, clearly whatever is, it's a T5 mutant, so it's T5 resistant. So this happens to be a T5 resistant bacterium, and it's rising in the population, and apparently the T5 sensitive bacteria have a beneficial mutation that causes the T5 resistant ones to decline as the T5 sensitive ones increase. Again, remember, this is basically a single genotype that is showing a sufficient benefit that it's driving all the other genotypes to a lower proportion of the population. And the genotype in this case just happens to be linked to T5 sensitivity. And then we have T5 resistant genotype, there's a mutation within that background, genetic background, to T5 resistance, and then there's a mutation in the T5 sensitive background to that's a large benefit, and then a mutation in the T5 resistant background that provides a large benefit, and so on and so forth. And so you've got these two populations going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, although it's just individual genotypes within these populations that are actually doing all of the rising and all of the declining. I should say, just in case there's some confusion out there, we're using a T5 resistant mutant, but that says nothing about the presence of T5 within the culture in which this experiment is occurring. In fact, the phage T5 is not in here. All you have is a selectively neutral marker, and because it's selectively neutral, it means that T5 isn't around. If T5 was around, it would not be neutral, because T5 would be wiping out all of the sensitive bacteria. Instead, you just have bacteria that outside of this culture, when you remove the culture from this medium, you can plate them out in the presence or in the absence of phage T5. In the presence of phage T5, only the resistant individuals will grow. In the absence of T5, all the individuals will grow. And from that, you can infer the ratio of T5 sensitive to T5 resistant bacteria in here. But T5 is certainly not found within the culture itself. So here you have this accumulation of beneficial mutations, and it just happens to be linked with this selectively neutral marker conferring T5 resistance. And here you have selection that is for a beneficial allele that just happens to not be found in a genetic background that contains the T5 resistant marker. And in fact, there's some, not all of the bacteria in this culture are T5 resistant. There are many also that are T5 sensitive. And it's among the T5 sensitive that you happen to have this beneficial mutation that then increases in frequency, and as a consequence decreases in frequency, the T5 resistant mutation, or T5 resistant marker rather. And so you also see some random jostling around of the T5 resistant mutations, like, for example, here within the population. Is that due to natural selection? Is that due to genetic drift? Who knows? But interestingly, in this range here, we basically have the fitness that's associated with those individuals that carry the T5 resistant marker being very similar to those individuals that carry the T5 sensitivity. In that basically the concentrations of both of these individuals are more or less staying the same. Again, is it selection that's bouncing things up and down, or is it just drift that's bouncing things up and down? Who knows? So this is kind of showing what's going on in that previous slide, although it's only looking at the impact of the it's only looking at one of the populations in there. This big B allele could be the T5 resistance marker. And so what we have is a mutation in this big B allele background from a little a allele to a big A allele. And then that big A allele supplies some kind of benefit that then drives the population up towards perhaps fixation. And in so doing, it is the big B allele that is carried along essentially for the ride. I mean, there's presumably a little B allele somewhere around up here that's being driven down in frequency. This is essentially what's going on when you have this going on, or perhaps this going on here. Let's go backwards a little bit, where you've got the population going along just fine. This is, you're looking at just the T5 resistant population explicitly here, the T5 resistant mutants. And then suddenly there's a beneficial mutation here in the population that carries these T5 resistant mutations. And so the T5 resistant mutation is hitchhikes along up in this population as this population is subject to periodic selection. So this big B allele just happens to be in the same genome as the new big A allele. The big B allele hitchhikes along as the big A allele increases in frequency because it's conferring some kind of benefit. So now we'll switch gears to the idea of frequency-dependent selection. In frequency-dependent selection, the fitness of an allele is a function of its frequency within the population. So it can either increase in fitness as it increases in frequency, or it can decrease in fitness as it increases in frequency. So what we have here is an allele that actually confers to the cichlids. I've got the explanation down here, which eat scales of other fish, and they happen to be asymmetrical, where their mouths are either facing to the right or they're facing to the left. And this allows the cichlids to sneak up on these other fish and grab a bite of scales from these other fish. And the thing is that these fish learn, and if they've been bitten on their left, they suddenly, they become wary of stuff that might be happening on their left. And so it becomes more difficult for the cichlids that are coming from their left to attack. And this, in fact, provides an opening for the rarer, if they are indeed rare at the time, right attacking cichlids. Because as long as the fish is paying attention to its left side, its right side is open. And so suddenly the right side attacking cichlids have a benefit, but as they increase in number, the fish becomes more wary to its right, and that provides a benefit to the cichlids on the left. So it pays in this circumstance to have the morphology such that you're the rarer attack side of the fish. If you're if the majority of the population attacks from the right, you're better off attacking from the left. And if the majority of the population attacks from the left, you're better off attacking from the right. And there are alleles that underlie whether you attack from the left or attack from the right. And what they have here is showing a graph of the frequency of the different attack sides of the orientation of the jaws, whereas where you have orientation on one to one direction being present in a higher frequency, that will actually select for orientation in the other direction, which will select for orientation in the other direction, which will select for orientation in the other direction, and so on and so forth. So this is frequency-dependent selection. It's a stabilizing frequency-dependent selection, so it's stabilizing the polymorphism, the alleles that encode for coming from this direction versus coming from this direction, around a mean, such that the two alleles in this case, in fact, are equally present, more or less, in the population. And it's stabilizing of that polymorphism. If you have a reduction in one kind, then that will select for an increase in that same kind. So you have two kinds of frequency-dependent selection. It's stabilizing frequency-dependent selection that is the typical one that you learn about when you learn about frequency-dependent selection. It means that the Darwinian fitness of the alleles actually decline as the alleles increase in number. And typically, this occurs as a consequence of trying to evade some mechanism whereby another species that you're interacting with is essentially learning either behaviorally or evolutionarily to evade the type of organism that the allele type that is more frequently found in the population. Alternatively, you have what can be described as disruptive frequency dependent selection. Here, the disruption is of polymorphisms, and what happens is as an allele becomes more frequent within a population, it actually becomes more fit within that population. This is essentially a positive feedback that eventually will drive other alleles to extinction. This is, by contrast, is an example of negative feedback, this stabilizing frequency dependent selection. Negative feedback tends to stabilize things around a mean. Positive feedback tends to drive things to completely out of control situations, such as where you have the other allele or alleles being driven to extinction. So stabilizing frequency dependent selection. So rare alleles are more fit than more common alleles. This can be seen in resistance to pathogens. So in bacteria, this can be seen as resistant to phages. If you are a more common allele, then you're potentially going to be more susceptible to these viruses that can kill you, and that will select against the more common allele. Simply having higher numbers of individuals could allow for a population to be support phages growth to a higher density, and that will result in more bacteria being killed off. So this is also described as killing the winner. It's the idea that the phage susceptibility types that are present in a population at higher frequencies become more susceptible to decimation by phages because they're able to support phage population growth to higher densities. So alleles that confer an inability to be recognized by a pathogen will be selected, and typically these are the rare alleles because the more common alleles the pathogen is focusing on overcoming. You see the same thing in MACs versus PCs in terms of their virus susceptibility. There are a lot more PCs out there, and therefore there are a lot more viruses that are written to attack PCs than there are viruses written to attack MACs. So PCs have these essentially strong immune systems that are all about protecting them from viruses, but there are a lot of viruses out there because there's a big payoff associated with having a virus that's effective against a PC, whereas there's much less payoff to have a virus that's effective against MACs. So even though MACs, in principle, at least have been more vulnerable to viruses, fewer people are bothering. And that's an example of frequency-dependent selection. Fewer people are bothering to write the viruses, that is. This kill the winner idea that you see associated with phages, where the more prevalent phage susceptibility types among bacteria would be expected to be more phage susceptible and therefore driven to lower concentrations. Stabilizing frequency-dependent selection can be referred to as balancing selection. And again, it gives rise to balanced polymorphisms. Balanced polymorphisms are stable polymorphisms. And recall that polymorphisms are a description of there being more than one allele present at a given locus within a population. So a stable persistence of more than one allele at a locus within a population is a balanced polymorphism. You see, among prey species, you can see frequency-dependent selection, where these butterflies, if they are too common within a population, particularly as mimics of bad-tasting butterflies, then the predator species will no longer be fooled to the same extent because they won't have as much reinforcement of accidentally consuming a species that tastes bad. If there are a lot of mimics around that taste good, they'll learn that it's worth going for these butterflies that potentially taste good, because the odds of consuming a butterfly that tastes bad will be lower because the good tasting ones simply are too prevalent, and that will select against the morphotypes that look like one kind of bad tasting butterfly, and in fact will result in selection for the rarer butterfly that looks like another kind of bad tasting butterfly. And so you'll have a going back and forth here, where whatever is the rarer morphotype will be strongly selected for, because the predators of these butterflies, basically birds, are going to have learned about the trick of looking like a bad tasting butterfly among the more common morphotypes, but will have been less likely to learn about this trick among the less common morphotypes. And then there's the cichlid example. It's an example of a balanced frequency-dependent selection. In other words, the population is staying in the middle here. You're not having one or the other morphotype being driven towards fixation. And that's because the rare alleles are more fit than the more common ones. So as a allele becomes more and more common, it becomes less and less fit, and that selects for the rarer alleles. There are bacterial diversifying mechanisms that are associated with phages, and since we just talked about a few of them, I'll talk a little bit more about these mechanisms. This is just to remind you what a phage is. That's a bacterium. That's a phage infecting the bacterium, and it infects and produces more phages and lyses the bacterium. So different mechanisms that are associated with phages that actually have the effect of increasing the diversity of bacteria. And some of these are selection-based, and some of these are due to other mechanisms, particularly migration. So lysogeny, so phages can integrate within the genomes of bacteria, and they can supply along with them genes that can convert the phenotype of the bacterium. Basically, the bacteria are increased in diversity because they're supplied with new genes by the phages that can infect them over long time periods. Transduction is a means of genetic migration, movement of alleles from one bacterium to another bacterium that's mediated by bacteriophages. You also have this process of kill the winner, which I just talked about, where you have basically the bacteria that are of a common phage susceptibility type are more likely to be wiped out by phages than bacteria that are of an uncommon phage susceptibility type. So there is a selection against common phage susceptibility types and selection for uncommon phage susceptibility types or rare types. And that is called killing the winner, and that is simply another type of frequency-dependent selection. And then also, interestingly, phages can lyse bacteria. That's what we're seeing right here. And when they do so, they solubilize the bacteria. And this solubilization of the bacteria actually releases nutrients into the environment, and those nutrients often are consumed by other bacteria, and the greater diversity of nutrients that you have out there, the more types of bacteria you're going to have out there. Interestingly, this impact in ecological terms of phages on bacteria, lysing these bacteria, is actually a kind of decomposition of the bacteria. And within a soil environment, soils are all about decomposition, and so phages are actually contributing in important ways to the decomposition process in soils. So in soils, organic matter is broken down. That feeds, for example, bacterial populations, and these populations will essentially lock up those nutrients unless they are broken apart, and one means by which they're broken apart is by infection and then lysis by these phages. So phages have a lot of impact on the diversity of bacterial populations. Phages turn out to be very, very important. They're also an important new way, although new, newly discovered or newly recognized way, a re-recognized way that we can treat bacterial infections, because phages are highly specific and they're able to kill bacteria, and they can be used as essentially replacements of antibiotics in a process known as phage therapy. So that's a kind of frequency-dependent selection. And those actually represent sex, migration, same thing. And this is actually a phenomenon that's related to ecosystem ecology, where an organism is having an impact on the greater ecology, especially the abiotic aspects of their environment, as a consequence of their actions. In this case, lysis of bacteria. So then there's also disruptive frequency-dependent selection. So the disruption is of polymorphisms, of balanced polymorphisms, or it's the opposite of the stabilization of a polymorphism. Basically, with disruptive frequency-dependent selection, you have selection on an allele that increases as it becomes more frequent, and this leads to a positive feedback that ultimately can lead to at least the local extinction of all alleles except for the most prevalent one. So in the case of disruptive frequency-dependent selection, the more common alleles are more fit. And one place where you see this is in the resistance to what can be described as allelopathic effects by bacteria. And so a good example of this is the production by bacteria of bacteriocins. With bacteriocins, what you have are molecules that basically attack other members of the same species of bacteria. And as these molecules become more prevalent, or as the bacteria that produce these molecules become more prevalent, they are able to exert a stronger and stronger negative impact on the bacteria that, in fact, are sensitive to these molecules. So the presence of the increasing presence of these allelopathic affecting factors, these bacteriocins, is to reduce in fitness those bacteria that in fact are sensitive to the bacteriocins. Now, the sensitive bacteria are ones that also that don't produce the bacteriocins, and the resistant bacteria tend to be ones that do produce the bacteriocins. So if you have a colony of bacteriocin-producing bacteria amidst colonies or microcolonies of other bacteria that produce bacteriocins, there will be a tendency for the sensitive ones, the ones that don't produce the bacteriocins, to be driven to extinction. And this is a positive feedback where basically one allele type takes over the population, that produces the bacteriocin and is resistant to the bacteriocin. And in fact, this is the whole point of bacteriocins. The whole point is for them to go into a population and completely disrupt the population in such a way that the bacteriocin producers come out on top, go to fixation, and the sensitive bacteria end up being driven to extinction. This is also an example of soft selection, by the way, where you have an increased competitive ability because of the production of these bacteriocins. And interestingly enough, when the production of bacteriocins is actually costly to the producers. So unless the bacteriocin producers are wiping out conspecifics that are sensitive to the bacteriocin, they themselves actually are at a disadvantage because of the cost of producing the bacteriocin. So this is a case where selection for a population actually has the effect of reducing the average fitness of the population. And this is very much soft selection. It's an interspecific competition. So bacteriocins, also bacteria produce antibiotics, and bacteria also can produce, also carry prophages that can be turned into regular ordinary phages that can wipe out sensitive bacteria. So there's a host of different types of factors that bacteria can produce that are antagonistic to other bacteria, particularly conspecifics. And these serve as forces of disruptive frequency-dependent selection because the more prevalent these factor-producing bacteria are, the bigger the impact the factor-producing bacteria will have on the bacteria that don't produce these factors. And that will lead to a runaway situation where basically these individuals can drive the other individuals to extinction. The reason why these factors remain within the bacteria population, however, is at least in part because the extinctions tend to be only localized, and therefore there will be other populations of sensitive bacteria out there rather than essentially wiping out sensitive bacteria globally. So in each case, expression of allelopathic agents requires the expressing genotype to also be immune to the allelopathic agents. So it's really an increase in the resistant genotype, or the genotype that confers resistance due to the selection mediated by these allelopathic factors that results in an increase in the frequency of one allele over another. And so this is an example of a plate where you've got bacteria that are producing allelopathic factors, and basically these lines around the different bacterial types represent the production of factors that are antagonistic to other bacteria. So if you find yourself within a colony of a bacteriocin-producing bacterium, it is best to be producing and be resistant to the same bacteriocin. And that's true for antibiotics as well. If you find yourself within a colony or adjacent to a colony of an antibiotic-producing bacterium, you're far better off being resistant to that bacterium than being sensitive to it. And this tends to drive the localized extinction of the sensitive genotypes and the localized fixation of the resistant ones. And the resistant ones tend to produce the antagonistic agent. But again, there are costs to producing the antagonistic agent, and so you get all sorts of interesting situations where basically in the absence of a competitor that's sensitive to the bacteriocin, it's actually more costly to carry the bacteriocin than it would to not have a bacteriocin. So anyway, very complicated. But the important point is it's disruptive frequency-dependent selection. The higher the frequency of the allele, the higher the fitness of the allele. And this is seen particularly when you have the production of these antagonistic agents where there is a resistance that's in association with the production of the antagonistic agent. And it's the resistance that's being selected for and the sensitivity that's being selected against. So you also can have diversification going on in chemostats that occurs as a consequence of none of these mechanisms that we've seen before. And this is a selection-driven diversification. So this is a chemostat culture. We haven't talked about chemostats yet too much, but basically these are continuous cultures where the cultures are just replicating and replicating and replicating without break. And within this culture, you've got basically some kind of marker that allows you to keep track of the different populations. And when the population goes up to 100%, that means that one of the markers has gone extinct. Or when the other population goes to 0%, it means a marker has gone extinct. But you do have situations where, in fact, you have maintenance of both markers within the population. And the argument here is that this is being maintained because it's a relatively complex medium that these bacteria are growing in. And you have selection for bacteria that have specialized on one aspect of the media, and selection for other bacteria that have specialized on another aspect of the media. And so you have maintenance of both populations within the culture because, in fact, they're competing less than they would otherwise. And so you don't have a competitive exclusion going on, which might be what's, in fact, going on here, driving one population or the other to extinction. Instead, you have a maintenance of both populations because those two populations have set things up evolutionarily so that, in fact, they don't compete to the same extent. This could be described as a character displacement. They basically have specialized on different things in the same environment so that they have the potential to survive in that environment more effectively together. So a lack of a marker or allele fixation due to bacteria specialization on one or more than one nutrients available in these environments. And this is another route towards balanced polymorphisms. It, to a degree, is similar to where you have the stabilizing frequency-dependent selection and you have these butterflies, for example, that have specialized on two different approaches to surviving. In this case, you've got bacteria that have specialized on two different approaches to gathering up resources. And this driving of bacterial populations to extinction is again an example of periodic selection.